The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Today, we're going to be speaking with Matt Timmins, Joint CEO of Fintel, about Fintel's strong financial performance, recent acquisitions, and the launch of Matrix 360. We're going to be discussing the company's growth strategy, shift towards SaaS, and how it's positioned in a changing regulatory landscape. Matt, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Martin, and wonderful to be here as well.
Well, you posted some strong revenue growth and the business performance looks very impressive. 21% revenue increase to 78.3 million. You've got core SaaS and subscription revenue up 17%. What are the main drivers behind this growth and how sustainable is this trajectory?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's been an incredible year for the business. When I look back, I think we've delivered a huge new product release in Matrix 360, which I'm sure we'll come on and talk about later. So, really big product enhancement from the team that we've been working on for over 18 months. On top of that, we've made five acquisitions and delivered what I think is a very compelling set of financial results as well. As you said, you know, core revenues up 22%, EBITDA up 8.5%, and SaaS and subscriptions up 17% as well. So good set of results on the back of an incredibly busy year for the business. I think, you know, the sort of primary drivers for that is the sale of more technologies. You can see the SaaS and subscriptions increasing. And more of our intermediary customers taking multiple products from us. And we expect both of those trends to continue. So with the acquisitions that we've made, we have now compelling software propositions across all areas of an intermediary's business. So everything a firm needs to do from start to finish when they begin their journey as an intermediary and go out and advise clients, we have software propositions across all of those core activities. So a really big drive for us on increasing software sales, and a drive as well as part of the sort of development of Matrix 360 to continue to provide more software and data services out to the insurers. So that's been the sort of primary reason behind the growth. As always with our market, you've got regulatory drivers at the heart of what we do. And the harder regulation becomes, the more changes, the more it bites, the more it drives intermediaries to look to outsource some of their support services to organizations like us. So, you know, we've seen a real uptick in revenue as a result of the Consumer Duty, more intermediaries choosing to join Simply Biz and 360 and Compliance First. And our VouchFor product that we acquired, VouchFor Business, that really does play right at the very heart of Consumer Duty and acts as a tool which goes out and interviews essentially clients and gets their feedback on what the intermediary firm's providing for them. So both of those elements have really, really added to the growth.
Right, so before we delve too much into the regulatory side, I want to take a step back and just get a better understanding of Matrix 360. I think it's been described as a market-first intelligent tool for investors, and it integrates data pricing, claims, and product benchmarking things. How do you see this evolving as a tool then? Because clearly it's an important acquisition for you guys. And is it a big competitive advantage? Does it provide that for you?
Yeah, so Matrix has been a product that sat within the sort of de facto stable of products for a number of years. The revenue that we generate as a business from the old Matrix software is around 3 million a year. So it's been a substantial product for us over over many years. And what Matrix essentially does is it provides products data to insurers and also to price comparison websites. So if you're launching a new general insurance product into the market, you can go into the Matrix database and find out what other competitive products are out there and the features and benefits of all the products in the market. So it's been a service or a data set that we've provided to the sector for a long period of time. What Matrix 360 does is it brings in other data sets to augment that product set. So it brings in pricing, it brings in economic data, it brings in weather data, claims history, that sort of thing. So it allows the insurers primarily at this stage to have a much more comprehensive assessment on what's out there in the market, what's likely to change and drive demand, and how are competitors building their products in terms of product feature and pricing. So Matrix 360 is a build on the old Matrix proposition, but with clearly a higher retail price for us because it includes all these additional data sets. So it's moving Matrix into a much more premium product across the insurance sector. Now, when we finish developing Matrix 360 for the insurance market, we then will change our development roadmap to go into banking and asset management, where we also operate a Matrix product, but we'll bring in the enhancements for 360. So I think it's a long-term product development roadmap. And we aim, obviously, to take the 3 million of revenue that we currently generate through Matrix and, improve and enhance that significantly.
So it's we can assume it's going to be a constant evolution and R&D investment into the product and across multiple sort of revenue streams then and different
Yeah,
sectors.
absolutely. Yeah, and the great thing for us with this, when companies launch new products, there's always that moment of will they succeed in the market? Can they go out and find the clients that they want to find? Have they priced it right? What's the promotional messaging behind it, et cetera, et cetera. So we already have the customers, they're using our existing Matrix product, and we've worked with a significant number of those throughout the last 12 months to make sure what we're developing through 360 is the right approach for them and delivered at the right price. So I'm confident that this sort of cautionary evolutionary build, if you like, will pay dividends in the future. Matrix 360 has only been live for a couple of months now, and we've got the first six major clients signed up to it as well. So that's a testament to the team and the hard work they've put in over the months and years on this one.
So as a product, you've basically already got your clients. You're just going to be upselling different features from that product then, is it?
Correct. Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
Absolutely.
you've made
Yeah.
five acquisitions, so you've got a strong M&A strategy at the moment. And what's
Yeah.
the rationale behind this sort of M&A spree you've been having? And do these acquisitions then enhance Fintel's long-term value proposition?
Yeah, I believe they fundamentally do. I mean, we've been a business that's been relatively cash rich, and the cash conversion of this business is phenomenal. So it's important that we go and put that cash to work in the right way. And we either invest that internally on developments like Matrix 360, or we use to go out and acquire businesses or, IP and technology that we need to build the future of Fintel. That sort of coincided with a period of time where a number of these businesses became available at the kind of price and value that we were willing to pay. And again, a sort of further string to that bow, if you like, was that the vast majority of intermediary firms use 9 or 10 pieces of software from different vendors throughout their daily lives. And so our view was, yeah, let's use the cash that we've got while it's available to go out and buy businesses at a sensible price that will enable us to build a platform of technology solutions that mean we can do everything for an intermediary firm from start to finish. And we've largely completed that jigsaw now. I mean, we've got the most comprehensive and well-used technology solutions out there in the market. The next phase of development for us is to integrate them fully through two-way API integrations. So you can have a single sign-on and a single user journey across those pieces of technology. And then to sort of converge the UX and the UI so that you're in a platform environment akin to something like a Microsoft 365, where whilst you have different individual sort of products or applications within it, it all looks and feels like you're in the same environment. So that's the sort of journey that the business is going on. We've got the raw ingredients now, and we're taking them through to the next stage of growth. What is encouraging for us is that while we do this piece of work, we've also got those individual businesses selling software licenses to clients individually. So we have success in the individual verticals, and now we're bringing them all together.
That's interesting. I'm fascinated by how the model is changing or has sort of grown more into sort of SaaS and subscription. I believe 70, 65% of your revenue now comes directly from SaaS and subscription. What steps are you taking to accelerate this transition? And how does this improve earnings quality for you yourself? And what does this indicate for investors?
Yeah, I mean, the businesses are always had high quality revenues, in my opinion. So, the vast majority, as you say now, come from SaaS and subscriptions, technically recurring or mechanically recurring, if you like. The balance of that comes from repeatable income. So, if you looked at all the income lines in the business, kind of 90, 95% are either recurring or highly repeatable. So same customers buying the same product from us year in, year out. So if you take something like the Defaqto ratings service that we offer, it's not technically recurring because it's an annual vintage or an annual subscription, but it's the same companies buying the same service from us each and every year. In terms of technically recurring, it is SaaS and subscriptions. It's the big membership base that we've got and the technology that we've got. And a key part of the strategy of our business is to move some of the annual repeatable contracts that we've got into monthly recurring revenues to continue to improve the earnings quality. It's an area that I think we're already really strong at, but I think demonstrating that through, technically recurring revenues will make the business even stronger. And we have really sticky customers. And as I said, 90, 95% of everything we do is recurring or repeating in nature.
Yeah, I think all investors like to see that MRR, monthly recurring revenue number going up, and that's it for the and your product, I would imagine, it's got to be so, like you say, sticky. I mean, your retention rates must be quite high. I mean, obviously you can't share that with me, but I mean, we can assume that's pretty good going there. There's a sort of growth.
Yeah, they're incredible. I mean, the vast majority of intermediary customers stay with us for 7, 8, 9 years. This is a long-term recurring business model here. And then when you get to software licenses, again, the longevity is very, very similar. So we have very little churn in the business, and it allows us to be able to plan forward in a way that means we can be certain of the monthly and annual revenue coming forward for the next period of time. So we can allocate resources properly in the business. We can look at our cash allocation strategy, and really move the business on. It's a good position to be in.
Good. I also wanted to sort of pick up on the regulatory thing. I think it's sort of
Oops.
18 months ago when sort of our previous leader Rishi stood there in Bletchley Park bragging about how the UK was going to become the world leaders in regulation on fintech and crypto and everything else. I suppose
Yeah.
that's been trickling down, but this increased regulation, certainly in the retail finance, financial services, is a major theme at the moment. And how is Fintel positioned then to benefit from this trend? Because surely you must be in the prime position.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there are two types of models in our sector. One is a model where you take responsibility for the advice that's given when an intermediary goes out and sees a customer. So those are the big national advice businesses and consolidators and those kind of firms. And then there's our kind of model where you're providing the services and technology and data and solutions underneath it, but you're not giving advice to retail clients. And that's the kind of model that I really like personally, because it means that we can benefit from increases in regulation and changes in regulation without having to worry about redress or things that we, may have done wrong in the past. And you'll see the regulator at the moment is really looking into the consolidation market. They're looking into whether these firms have been bought in the right way for the right reasons, and that the, solutions that they're offering to their clients is in the client's best interest. And so some of those organizations now are going to be doing a lot of work in the background on preparing for the regulator coming in. And some of those organizations are going to have to go back and review all the files and advice that's been given in the past. Our role is to support any business going through that kind of change. So we're a benefit of that change in regulations, and we go out and help on a consultancy basis for those firms rather than are under the sort of regulatory microscope ourselves. So anything that happens to change or increase the burden of regulation in the sector, we see that as a real sort of tailwind for our business.
Okay, so I mean, what I'm getting here is like you're almost going to keep regulatory reg tech away and focus purely on the fintech side of it.
So we've got a big, the business is almost split into two. So you've got a fintech and data element, which is about providing software and data to the market. And then a big part of it, which is about regulatory services. So this is about us having hundreds of staff who fundamentally understand product regulation and FCA regulation, and are able to go out and help intermediary firms on a membership basis to navigate that regulation. What we will see a little bit of as we move forward is the convergence of those two. So fintech helps a intermediary with their back office and front office systems. The regulatory side of things is information and services. And when you put those two together, you end up with software that has regulation built into it, or reg tech, as you said before. So we've got the two ends of support services and regulatory IP, fintech on the other side, and then a conversions of the two to bring it in for firms that write the center.
Okay, so you've made these sort of five acquisitions. I mean, would I be correct in assuming that the focus is now going to shift towards organic growth? And can you sort of outline what's the sort of key initiatives you can see for the sort of next sort of 6 to 12 months? I mean, is this going to be cross-selling, platform integration? What's going to drive revenue and EBITDA, I suppose I'm asking.
Yeah, definitely. So I think we've made the acquisitions that we have needed to make as a business. So unless there is anything out there that comes across as being, mission critical or a real addition to the platform, we will stay as we are in terms of running the business without major acquisitive growth for the time period, while we pay off some of the debt and integrate the businesses. We have got, as I said, a series of, I think altogether it was kind of eight or nine acquired businesses and some investments that we made. So we'll be concentrating on growing those organically to the customer sets that they serve, bringing them together through the Fintel IQ proposition that we have, which is this sort of one user journey and the sharing of data and UX and UI across the platform, growing out Matrix 360 to the insurance market and then the asset management and banking market. And those are the sort of primary areas of growth, if you like, for the business. So you've got the development of Matrix 360, you've got the integration of the technology solutions that we've bought, and then the general organic growth that the business has kind of built within its engine anyway.
Well, Matt, that's Fascinating. And thanks for your insights. I mean, certainly you've been working very hard. I'm sure all investors will be very pleased with the performance so far. Exciting times ahead for Fintel as you scale forward. And I'm myself, and I'm sure all the others investors are looking forward to seeing what's next.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for your support and thanks for the opportunity to talk today. Thank you.
My pleasure, Matt. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be.
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.